Starting verse 19. We'll read to verse 23. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they become futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they become fools, and exchange the glory of the immutable, immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. In this text, we see the heart of idolatry, or the method of idolatry. John Calvin says, the heart perpetually produces idols. The heart is constantly, your heart, my heart, is constantly mass-producing idols. Our heart's like a conveyor belt, and it's constantly putting out, making, creating, designing various idols. Martin Luther claimed that an idol is whatever your heart clings to and confides in. That is really your God. Whatever your heart clings to and confides in, Martin Luther says, that's your God, that's your idol. And we're prone to be idol worshipers. We're prone to idolatry. Your heart just does it naturally, easily. Your heart's looking for something other than God to worship, to serve, to honor, to aspire after, to cling to. And if you don't know how to make idols, I'm going to tell you how. This morning's message is how to construct your own idols. Now, I know it comes natural for you, and you do it all the time, but you may not be quite aware how you actually do it. Actually, how you mass produce these idols, in this text tells us the steps that you and I take in producing these idols. So this morning we're going to look at how to build an idol so that you'll know. You'll know how you do it. And there's four steps that you do. There's four steps to creating an idol. The first step is you have to suppress the knowledge of God. And that's the hardest step of all. That's the difficult task. If you're going to be an idol worshiper and you're going to create you an idol, the hardest part is suppressing the knowledge of God. The second step is you have to become dissatisfied with God. And the third step is you have to become a fool. And the fourth step is you have to exchange the glory of God for shame. So let's look at these steps one at a time and see how to do it. Let's see how to make idols so that we know if we're going to do it, let's do it well. Let's make an idol the best we can. First things first, if you're going to worship something other than God, you've got to get God out of your mind. You've got to push him out of your mind. Now, you who are sitting on the fence and you don't know if you're going to worship God or not, go ahead and do it right. Worship an idol of your own making. So go ahead and say, I don't want you, God. Just be honest about it. Quit playing around with God. Just be clear. God, get out of my mind. That's the first step. Do you think you can build an idol while God's watching over you? As you're meditating upon God, do you think you can actually bow down to another God? Do you think that's going to be easy? I mean, if you're going to cheat on your wife, don't you want your wife not to be looking? Don't you want to do it in the dark? You've got to get God out of your eyes and out of your mind. And this is the hardest step. It's hard to get God out. You have to suppress the truth. We looked at that last week, the difficulty of suppressing the knowledge of God. But if you want to do that, Paul lays out the ingredients of how to suppress the knowledge of God, or how it's done. First of all, you've got to quit acknowledging him. Look at verse 19 with me. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. You see, God has made himself known to you. You know about God. You can't deny it. There's no such thing as real atheist or honest atheist. As one person said, God doesn't believe in atheists. So you may be claimed to be an atheist, but you know deep down, God has made himself known to you clearly. The word is plain. There in verse 19, what can be known about God is plain to them. You do know in your heart God is there. The word plain means clear, obvious, or evident. That is, the things that can be known about God through natural revelation, through looking at creation, what can be known through this method of revelation is made known clearly. God is a good communicator, and he knows how to communicate in a way that you understand. He's not a poor communicator at all. And this is called natural revelation, that which we learn by just looking at creation, just looking around us. There are certain things we learn, not just about creation itself, but something that we learn about the Creator. This verse assumes that we know that that which is made has a maker. That which is designed has a designer. And we know that by looking around. You see, verse 19 says, because God has shown it to them. God has revealed himself to you. Now, some theologians deny what is classified as natural theology. And natural theology is the knowledge of God gained not through revelation, but gained through reason. And some deny that it's impossible to reason up from God from the standpoint of finite man. However, just because we may struggle with natural theology doesn't mean that we have to deny natural revelation. Natural revelation is not man reasoning up to God. It is God revealing himself to man. It is God who makes himself known. It is God who is revealing himself to us. And we see that there's both an objective side to this revelation and a subjective side. It is God who is actually communicating objectively, speaking to us through creation, and it is us who understands what God is communicating. There's the subjective side of us going, yes, I understand. I see God. And so you can lie to yourself, but God knows you're lying to yourself, and you know you're lying to yourself. God is very effective. When he wants to reveal himself, he knows how to do it. So you can say, where is God? I don't see God. Yes, you do. You see him everywhere. We see in verse 12, this is how he reveals himself. And this is the second, verse 20, I mean. And this is the second reason we have to actively suppress the knowledge of God. It's because he can be seen everywhere we look. We see in verse 20, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. This is kind of an oxymoron. The things that are invisible, such as God, he is not physical, he's not tangible. You can't see God. But he is made visible, the invisible is made visible by looking at the visible, by looking at the things that are made, by looking at creation. These invisible attributes, namely his deity and his power. You look at creation and all the power in creation, and you can't but know there is a powerful God behind this universe. Psalms 19 tells us, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. Every day, God is speaking to you. Every day, you don't even have to open your Bible, and God is speaking to you. Thus, if you're going to be an idol worshiper, you see what you got to do? It's hard. You've got to suppress the truth. You've got to get God out of your mind. You've got to quit thinking about God. Psalms 19 goes on to say, there is no speech, nor there are words whose voice is not heard. The voice goes out through all the earth, and the words to the end of the world. Every soul knows there's a God. By looking at creation, looking at the handiwork. Now there is a debate, does this revelation come to us immediately or through some syllogism? Is it immediate awareness of God by just looking at creation that you just know without any deductive reasonable reason? Or is it you know there's a God because of some logical proof? Well, Thomas Aquinas is the one who's famous with the five logical proofs. The two most notable of those five is the cosmological argument that every cause, every effect must have a proper cause. And because the world is full of effects, therefore it must have a cause that is not itself affected by any outside cause. And that's where we get the phrase, the unmoved mover. The other one is the teleological proof or argument. And this is the argument by design. If you see a painting, not modern art, that could have been done randomly by anything. But if you see a true, skillful piece of art, immediately go, there must be a skillful artist behind this piece of art. And is there not art everywhere you look? Look up in the skies. Do you not see a painting? Do you not look into the mountains and not see beauty everywhere? William Paley, in his book, Natural Theology, gives us an example of a man walking in a desert and he finds a pocket watch. And if you find a pocket watch, do you assume that this pocket watch, with all of its parts, with its function and its purpose, do you assume that this pocket watch just simply exists randomly? Or do your mind reason from that there must have been a watchmaker to put such design and skill into such a piece? Look at your body. I almost cut my finger off the other day. I won't tell you how. But I thought it would be deformed for the rest of my life. In 2-week period, it looks almost like my other fingers. How? How does the body heal itself like that? I mean, it cut off my fingernail and everything. But now it's all pretty much grown back. Sensation's still not there, but it's amazing. And that is just supposed to be the body, the human body, just exists out of nothing. Caused by nothing but chance. It's hard not to see God in the engineering all around us. So maybe we understand that there's a deity by looking at creation and going through a logical process of deduction. Because of this, there must be this. Through this syllogism effect. Others say, no, we know there's a God by looking at creation, not because of some logical process of thinking. But we look at creation and we immediately know there's a God, even if we do not do the proper logical steps and reason. John Calvin says there's within all of us a natural instinct and awareness, a deity. And that's because we're made in the image of God. And we can't help but see God because we're made in that image of God. And Alban Plantinga, if you haven't heard of him, he is a philosopher, a Calvinistic philosopher of all things, who actually was the president of the American Philosophical Association, which is the highest position in America. And so he's recognized globally. And he's one of us. He's a Christian, but a world-renowned philosopher. And Alban Plantinga says, we know there's a God because God is one of those, what he calls, a basic belief. And he says basic beliefs are the beliefs that we have, that we already have. They're pre-installed. They're kind of innate beliefs that we do not need to be taught. We don't need to have some logical reasoning. We don't have to come to it through some conclusion, but we just have it. And he gives an example of your memories. The fact that you know what you ate for breakfast this morning is one of those basic beliefs. The fact that you believe in your memories. It's just intuitive. And he says the awareness of divinity is a disposition or set of dispositions to form theistic beliefs in response to stimuli that triggers the outworking of the sense of deity. And this is how he explains it. It isn't that one beholds the night sky and notes that it is grand and then concludes there must be such a person as God. He says an argument like this would be weak. He says rather that upon the perception of the night sky or the mountain vista or the tiny flower, these beliefs just arise within us. They are occasioned by the circumstances. They are not the conclusion from them. We just know there's a God intuitively when we see creation around us. Why? Because God's made us in his image. And we see God everywhere. But regardless which approach you take, I think is a combination of both. It is evident that you and I know God is there. So this is why it's the hardest step of idolatry. It's the hardest step for us to suppress this knowledge. We've got to get rid of God. And you and I have probably committed idolatry this last week. And the reason we did and how we did it is we took our minds off of God. We had to. We had to. Now that's hard. But that's what you got to do. You see, in verse 20 it ends by saying, so they are without excuse. You know there's a God. God knows you're a God. And you have no excuse. On the day of judgment, when you take all your idols and present them before the Lord, he says, I didn't know which God to worship. I was left alone. You didn't give me clear revelation, God. God's going to look at you and you're going to know I'm lying. You have no excuse for your idolatry. It's for this reason to build an idol, you have to suppress the knowledge of God. So yes, you will be judged for suppressing the knowledge of God. But hey, if you really want to worship an idol, at least you know what you got to do now. If that's what you want to do, you got to get God to be quiet. Scott Oliphant says the knowledge of God is continued to be infused in us, speaks to us constantly, even when we don't want to listen. So, you got your work cut out for you. You're really going to have to suppress it and keep suppressing it and keep suppressing it, because every time you look around, every time you look at your conscience, it's going to constantly be going back. There is a God and you're worshiping the wrong deity. But because it's hard to suppress the knowledge of God, the second step makes that a little easier for us. How do we suppress that knowledge? Well, Paul explains. Step two, if you're going to build an idol, you must become dissatisfied with God. That's the key. God's not enough. That's what you got to say to yourself. Look at 21 with me. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. So if you're going to replace God with an idol, you have to become dissatisfied with the true God. You've got to convince yourself, which I know you've done occasionally. You have to say these words to yourself. God's not enough. God's not enough. So, you know, if you want to build an idol, keep on saying that. God's not enough. You become dissatisfied with him. You know, are you happy? I mean, have you been unhappy this week? It's because you say, God's not enough. You've been discontent? Have you grumbled? Have you? Well, good. You know how to do this. You're good at this, it seems. You know, if we're going to have to become discontent, the best way of becoming discontent with God is to cease to worship God. You see, there's a direct correlation between worshiping God and being satisfied with God. Worshiping God is glorifying God and enjoying him forever. In fact, that's what the Catechism teaches us. This is the chief end of man. This is our main purpose. This is why God's made you. He's made you for his glory and for you to enjoy him. In fact, these two things cannot be separated. To glorify God, you have to enjoy him. And when you don't enjoy him, when you're not satisfied with him, that's when you're dishonoring him. You're saying he's not enough. Thus, if you want to be an idol worshiper, you've got to quit worshiping the true God. And the way you do that is say, he's not enough, I'm not happy, I'm dissatisfied. And then you've got to start looking for happiness in something else. That makes sense? You have to go somewhere else. And to not worship God, the first thing you have to do is quit acknowledging him. Verse 21 says, for although they knew God. You know, the knowledge of God is there, but you've got to not pay attention to that. You have to ignore that. If you want to cheat on your spouse, cheat on your taxes, you just have to look away from the truth. Look away from the light. To build an idol, what you have to do is quit thinking about God. You know, don't read your Bible as much. That'll help you build these idols. Just kind of slow down in your Bible reading. Have you been doing that good this week? Have you been taking your decisions to the Lord in prayer? Want to buy something and don't know if it's wise or not? Have you been praying about it? Bible says, you know, acknowledge him in all your ways and he'll direct your path. Have you been doing that? Well, it's good if you're going to build an idol not to do that. Neglect his word. Neglect the prayer meeting. Neglect the worship. Neglect serving God. You know, don't acknowledge him. And that's the second thing you got to do is not acknowledge him and not honor him. Look at verse 21. For although they knew God, they did not honor him. They did not worship him. They did not praise him. Hey, if you're not thinking about God, it'll be easier for you not to honor him. The best way away from God is just ignoring God. The best way to separate you and your spouse and have a bad marriage is just mind your own business. Be self-focused. That's the easiest way for you to grow apart. Just think about yourself. Just don't be thoughtful. You know, thoughtfulness takes effort. But if you want to run from the Lord, just don't be thoughtful. Don't think about him. And thus it'll be easy for you not to honor him. Yeah, I know he deserves all your honor. He deserves all your glory. I mean, he deserves your whole life. I mean, I know he's worthy. But how do you expect to think like that and build idols? You see, the third thing we see here is really the best method of building idols. Look at 21. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. This is so important in idol making, is just becoming unthankful. You need help in being unthankful? Start complaining. That'll help you be unthankful. Really? This? Oh, man. Start grumbling a little bit more in your spirit. Have a grumbling spirit. That'll help you not honor God. That'll help you cease from worshiping him and being thankful. You know, you can erect idols much, much faster when you complain. Just complain a lot more. Oh, you don't know how to complain? Well, let me help you. Think about the things you don't have. You know, it's just not fair. You know, you deserve those things. Don't you need these things? You know, every commercial, well, at least almost all commercials, the goal of a TV commercial, for the most part, is to make you discontent. And then try to give you the solution of your discontentment. We have the product just for you. And see, you can just become like that when you think about God. Just quit thinking about him. I mean, I know he's altogether glorious. He's altogether lovely. He's everything you need. He would make you happy. I understand that. But start thinking about things that may, well, it probably make you miserable, but start thinking about other things. So I don't know how to do this. Well, you know, follow Adam and Eve's example. They had everything. Every tree, every fruit. I mean, they had a direct relationship with God. Only thing that Adam lacked was it wasn't good for him to be alone, so God made him a helpmeet, made him a wife, help. I mean, everything. This is paradise. They had everything they wanted. But you know how they did this? Not enough. I need that one thing I don't have. I need that one fruit that's forbidden. Just become discontent. And you see how easy it is? What is in it your life now that you're aspiring after, that you just have to have, that you just want, that you're going to bed thinking about and you're waking up thinking about? You know, that might be robbing your attention from God. That might be distracting you, but that's okay if you want to build idols. Keep it up. This third step in becoming an idol, and this is going to be the easiest step for us all. I know it's the easiest step for me, is that we have to become fools. Look at verse 21. Through 22. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they become futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they become fools. You know, suppressing the knowledge of God is hard, but being a fool is easy to us. So this is what it takes. Idol worshipers are the biggest fools. And if we're going to create a foolish idol, we too must become foolish ourselves. And this begins in verse 21 with becoming vain in our thinking. Or as it says, futile, vain in our thinking. To replace God, who made us with an idol that we make, we have to be vain, or silly, or foolish. Isaiah 44 paints the picture quite well for us. It says, the carpenter stretches out a line. He marks it out with a pencil. He shapes it with planes and marks it with a compass. He shapes it into the figure of a man with the beauty of a man to dwell in a house. He cuts down cedars and he chooses a cypress tree or an oak and lets it grow strong among the trees of the forest. He plants a cedar and the rain nourishes it. Then it becomes fuel for a man. He takes a part of it and warms himself. He kindles a fire and breaks bread. Also, he makes a god and worships it. He makes it an idol and falls down before it. Half of it he burns on the fire, and the other half he heats meat. He roasts it and is satisfied. And he warms himself and says, aha, I am warm. I have seen the fire. And the rest of it he makes it into a god, his idol, and falls down to it and worships it. He prays to it and says, deliver me, for you are my God. Now see how foolish that is? To take a log and build something on one end of the log and take the other log and carve you a little statue and bow down and say, you're my God. I've made you, but now you're going to save me. You know, you just have to be an idiot. That's what it takes to be an idol worshiper. Let's just call it what it is. Foolish. Jeremiah 10:14 says, every man is stupid, devoid of knowledge. Every goldsmith is put to shame by his idols. For his molten images are deceitful, and there's no breath in them. I mean, these dumb things can't even breathe. They can't see. They can't hear. But you're praying to them. Oh, how wise you are. You've really figured this out. But not just vain in your thinking. More importantly, you have to become foolish in your affections. But they came futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. I think it's because our hearts is the seed of our thinking and emotions, that the heart is really the things that we have to become foolish in. That's the really thing that we have to focus on if we're going to be an idol worshiper. Ephesians 4:17 says, this I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their minds. And this is why their minds and their thinking is foolish. Having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their hearts. You got to have a hard heart. You have to change your affections. That is, we have to turn our hearts away from God if we really want to be a foolish person. If we're striving for this, this is what we must do. But you know, it's kind of hard to be a fool, or at least admit that you're a fool. And so if you want to make an idol, you've got to realize you're going to have to be a fool, but that's kind of difficult to acknowledge that you're a fool. So what you have to do is to brag on your foolishness. You know, pretend like you're not foolish, but becoming boastful about your silly things. Brag about it. Don't be ashamed of it. Brag about it. Look at verse 22. Claiming to be wise, they become fools. In this process of becoming an idol worshiper, you become the biggest fool. But, you know, the way they get around it is by bragging on themselves and by boasting and claiming to be wise. I used to have an Audi. My wife and I have different memories about this Audi. As an A4, it was the best car I ever owned. It was fun to drive. It had turbo. It had paddle shifters. I mean, I looked cool driving it, and it was fun to drive. I love that car. And some of you remember when I drove that. Remember me in that car. And towards the end of its career, it was in the shop more than it was on the road. And I would take it to this particular mechanic. We'd become friends by that time because it was in there every week, and he'd fix something, and man, I drove my cool Audi back home, and it break down. I take it back, and man, it was one problem after another. I had a guy who worked at the Audi dealership. By the way, I mean, I had a recall one time. I took the Audi to the Audi dealership. I'm used to going to Shade Tree Mechanics, you know, the mechanics that was going to give you a good deal, you know, and you're just fortunate to get your car back. Well, I took it to the Audi dealership because they had a recall on something that went bad on it. Man, you go in there and you get wined and dined, and they give you cookies and everything, and they're fixing your car, and they're asking if you want to take another car out. You know, just it's a great experience. And then they cleaned the car, and when I got back in it, not only was it running right, it had a little cookie on the dash. I mean, this is life, living the high life here. I love having an Audi. But anyway, I can't afford to take it to the Audi dealership, so I take it to this other mechanic. And basically, I sold it, got rid of it. But I loved it so much, I went and bought me another one just like it, black. Got me a black one, a couple new years newer. I drove it. Some of you remember that one, too. I drove it for about 3 weeks, and it broke. I took it to my mechanic friend. And he goes, I drive it in. And he goes, you got a new car? I go, yeah, I got a new one. He's like, what's wrong with it? I told him, what kind of car do you got? He's like, I got one just like my old one. And he went, hey, John, guess what the blue Audi guy got? He got a black one. And they started laughing. I felt like the biggest fool. It's like, what have I done? I was like, what have I done? I was like, so I went and researched and found that the most reliable vehicle is according to the testimony, is a Toyota Camry. So I went and traded in and got me a Camry. Had that car for about 5 or 6 years and I hadn't had one problem with it. But you know, it's no fun to feel like a fool, to feel silly, to realize you've done something kind of dumb. You know, that doesn't feel good. Well, what do you do to overcome the feeling of knowing deep down you have a guilty conscience for worshiping the wrong things? What do you do? Well, brag about it. You know, if you're turning evil into good and good into evil, why don't you take your foolishness and turn it into wisdom? You know, claiming to be wise, though you become fools. You mean, that's what you have to do. You know, the Bible says the world thinks the cross is folly. What we need to think is idolatry is not folly. That's wise. I mean, that's what you must do. But see, the reason why it's folly and the reason we have to call idolatry wise and brag about it is found in verse 23. And this is our last step. This is the capstone. This is how we bring idolatry to its full fruition. Verse 23. And exchange the glory of the immutable, immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. So we have to be dissatisfied with God, and we have to exchange God's glory, God's goodness, and God's greatness with something that's shameful and silly. You know, you don't need to be meditating upon the glory of Jesus Christ, the fact that he died for your sins, the fact that he served the Lord constantly and fully. Christ never had any idols. He was perfect in this area, in all areas, and he did this for your sake, and he laid down his life for you. He died for you, but you don't need to be worshiping that God. You don't need to be thinking and meditating upon Jesus. You know, you got better things to think about. More important things to occupy your hearts and your minds and your affections, don't you? You know, don't spend too much time meditating upon God. Start thinking about silly things, you know? Do what I did a couple months back when I was looking at skateboard stuff every day. Think about it, skateboard stuff, that's really worthy to put your mind on. I mean, that's some real important things. The wheels and the bearings and the bolts and the little trucks that hold it all together. Now, that has some eternal value to it, doesn't it? I mean, you got money in your pocket, don't think about giving it to the Lord. I mean, that might give you eternal riches that you can enjoy forever. That might bring glory and honor to the Messiah. That might be something worthwhile, but hey, you can spend your money better, can't you? You have things you just have to have. You need. You need those things. I mean, you might get good 5 years out of that stuff. Take care of it, you'll get 10. Why waste your life on God when there's so much of this world to live for? See, you have to take the glory of that which is immortal, that is eternal, that is glorious, and find something to replace that with something that's temporal, mortal, silly. Augustine defines sin. He says, I inquired what wickedness is, and I did not find a substance, but a perversity of will twisted away from the highest substance, which is God, and bent towards something inferior. That's what sin is. Replacing the glory of God with a new pair of jeans. You know? This is what Paul says in Philippians 3:18. For many of whom I have often told you and now tell you even with tears, walk as enemies of the cross of Christ. Their end is destruction. Their God is their belly, and they glory in their shame. I mean, they boast about the things they should be ashamed about. I mean, the things they're ashamed for, you hide, you cover up. You don't want to talk about it. It's shameful. It's embarrassing. But you know, the way about that, you have to become wise in your foolishness, and you have to glory in the things that should be shameful. So you need a glory in all your earthly accomplishments. You need a glory in all the things you can buy or will buy or want to buy. But this is what it says. Their end is destruction, their God is their belly, and they glory in their shame. And how does Paul say they glory in their shame? Now, you would think this glory in their shame, they're talking about homosexuality or something disgusting, something that is like, wow, would you glory in that? But this is how he says they glory in their shame. With minds set on earthly things. Sitting there on your phone, perusing Amazon, discontent with life and glorying in this or that. Oh, this is idolatry. That's why the 10th commandment tells us, thou shalt not covet. For covetousness is idolatry. So these are the four steps. Suppress the knowledge of God, become dissatisfied, become a fool, and exchange the glory of God with something shameful. Now, you say, Jeff, I don't want to be an idol worshiper. You told me how to build an idol. I know how to do that. I've been doing that all my life. I'm very good at making idols. Well, how do I break my idols? How do I get rid of my idols? How do I worship the only true and living God? Well, here's what you do. Acknowledge that nothing in this world can truly satisfy you. Charles Spurgeon says, nothing teaches us about the preciousness of the Creator as much as when we learn the emptiness of everything else. No rivals. God must be your God. It can't be your mother. It can't be your father. It cannot be your brother. It cannot be your sister. It can't even be yourself. It can be nothing. God will not have any equals. He alone must be God. And you must come to the realizing nothing in this world will satisfy me. Why am I discontent? Why do I have to have the bigger and better things? Why is life not good enough for me? Is not Christ plus nothing everything? You have Christ. You have God. He's promised to take care of you. Why do you need more money for? Why? God's already promised to take care of you. You've got God. Would you rather have $1 or the printing press? Would you rather have God or a lot of money or whatever it is that you want? Say, God will take care of you. First step, acknowledge that nothing in this world can truly satisfy you. Second, start acknowledging God. Start dwelling on God. You know, you won't regret it on the day of judgment if you quit looking at Facebook so much and reading the Bible more. Or whatever it is that occupies your time. I'm not saying don't look at Facebook. I'm not saying don't watch a movie. I'm just saying you're not going to regret it if you replace those things. Here's another big helpful tip. Start being thankful. Don't complain. Change the complaining with gratitude. And direct your thanks to God. Whatever meal you're eating, if it's a hot dog or a steak, either one, go, God, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate this. I appreciate you. You're a good God. I love you, God. You're worthy of my life. Just start being thankful. It's amazing. Your life will become happy. You'll become satisfied. You don't need these idols. They rob you of joy. They rob you of life. The problem with idolatry is That is what you're selling the value of your soul for. You know, you're going to live for something. And whatever you're living for, that is the value you're placing upon your soul. Counseled a lady who was dying of emphysema, had a trachea hole in her throat. She lit up a cigarette, started puffing. I go, why will you not stop? Why have you not stopped? She died like 3 days later, and she told me, I don't have anything else worth living for. What she's saying is, I've traded my soul, my life, to smoke. But people do it all the time. How many people are trading their souls for materialism of one kind or another, or pleasure? But that's what you're saying your soul's worth. That's what you're saying the value of your soul is. G.K. Beale has a book out called We Become What We Worship. And if we worship dumb things, we become dumb. But if we worship the deity, we become like God. It brings value and worth and glory to our own lives. And this brings us to the last thing we need to do. We need to worship and honor God every day. Not be idol worshipers. We need to be God worshipers. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. God, forgive us. Forgive us of idolatry.